Just to introduce Richard, he's a freshly retired government statistician, and he's going to talk tonight about statistics and their use under capitalism. And I presume he's going to then be comparing it with how we'd use them in a socialist society. So if you're ready, Richard, I'll invite you to begin.
Thank you, Steve. We've stolen some of my thunder. I would like to point out that I'm not a statistician. I stumbled into working for the Office of National Statistics, let's say by accident, but not quite. I mean, I was made redundant from a previous job. I worked for a software house, been writing and coding and testing computer programs. And they very kindly made me redundant. And I heard about this job by sort of unofficial means. I started off at ONS on a temporary contract. And then after about 18 months, I got a permanent job there. But
Richard, maybe you need to be a bit. Maybe you need to be a bit nearer the microphone.
I don't actually know where the microphone is on this wonderful machine. I'll just speak up a bit. I can't think of anything else to do.
Yeah, good idea.
Is that all right? I think the mic is sort of in the grill.
That sounds all right now. Yeah.
That's a bit loaded, yeah.
Is that all right? Okay.
Yeah.
The neighbours start banging on the walls. I'll just tell them to enjoy it. You're learning something, so shut up. No, right, yeah. So, my job at ONS, I got some statistics training while I was there, and I'd come across statistics earlier in life because of I did maths and science at school. I did a science degree, but I'm really a bit of an amateur. Bit of a fraud. I suffer from imposter syndrome, otherwise known as humility or modesty, but we're supposed to call it imposter syndrome these days. I worked on national accounts, which is financial and economic statistics, for my whole time at ONS. And I retired in the end of February this year. So that's quite important, I think, when we're going to talk about stats in socialism, because in capitalism, we're measuring largely with money. We're trying to put a price, an economic or financial number, stick it on something. And sometimes, a lot of the time it isn't appropriate. That really isn't the thing it's not the most useful thing. It's not really what you want to know. It's not very helpful. So that's we'll carry on with a little bit of my CV. So, I started off on routine production, we call the rounds, so monthly round, quarterly round of just getting the statistics ready for production. For a while, that was the GDP, which is sort of GDP is king, gross domestic product. And I heard that there's a statistician giving a talk at ONS one day, and he said it's the greatest invention of the 20th century. GDP. I beg to differ. And I think there's a general movement, feeling now in amongst economists and real sort of experts, people who are, you know, supporters of capitalism, that GDP isn't such a useful number, especially growth. We're always banging on about growth, how much GDP has increased. And that isn't a sort of a, this doesn't represent a healthy situation because of you're talking about what's being made and sold. You're talking about this value added, this value which is not related to how, you know, every person is experiencing it, you know, so you can get, you know, there's GDP growth, but, and then they tell you what the GDP per head of population is in a country. Well, that's fine, but the distribution of it is really important. I mean, one of the most important statistics that gets published is disposable household income, which is basically a way of saying, you know, how is everyone doing? Now, crude average of that. And that's the more, that's a really useful thing because then you can tell, I don't know, you could say it's sort of how well off it's after they've paid all their bills and all their sort of necessary things, what they have left, you know, on a little treat, a little luxury. That's, I think that's far more useful than talking about this crude average of how much has been done. And of course, there's the environmental thing to that about this production. This production doesn't take into account what it's doing to the environment. And so that's, you know, you've got this basically three ways of measuring it: income, expenditure, or output. And all of them are just, it's very, very crude, really. And the big issue is the fact that you're sticking pounds and dollars or whatever, you're putting a monetary value onto these things. And of course, with inflation, you have to remove the effect of inflation. So you have to create what's called a chain-linked volume measure. Putting it simply, it's like a constant price, but more than that. I don't want to get too technical about this, but I mean, it's basically a way of doing a genuine, an accurate comparison between this month's figure and last year, 10 years ago, etc. So, because, you know, if you imagine you're selling, let's say you sell it, look at how many you get a price for production of cars. So cars, so many millions of pounds worth of cars have been sold this year. But is that, are there actually more cars, have more cars been sold this year than last year? Or is it just that the price has gone up? So it's just removing the effect of prices. So that's one of the big issues with the economic statistics. Yeah. So having worked on GDP, you know, I worked on just the production job. I then got into systems development, which is on trade. And by trade, I mean exports and imports of goods and services to and from the UK. And over the years, there's various enhancements and improvements to how this was calculated, and also adding more detail. We've got more geographic breakdown now, so we know more about the UK's trade with other countries. And when Brexit came along, there's a lot of extra money became available to look into the impact of Brexit. And some very awkward questions are asked by politicians, such as, how many goods and services are flowing to and from Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK? And the short answer is, your guess is as good as mine, Minister, because ONS have never tried to measure it. I mean, it's all part of the UK. So this is all mixed up with, what was going to happen with this. The thing called the backstop. Remember this? Isn't this business about the backstop in the Northern Ireland Protocol? It's sort of trying to not have a hard border in the Irish Sea, having to somehow Northern Ireland could stay in the single market while England, Scotland and Wales weren't in it. So it's all something to do with that. Another thing that came up is asymmetries, which is trade asymmetries. This is quite you can either laugh or you can cry, really. But a trade asymmetry, an example of that is the UK reports that it exports a certain value of services to the USA. The USA reports that imports a much larger value from the UK. This discrepancy is several billion pounds per year and has been over several years. You think, what's going on here? How can it be? And we send them stuff, they get it. How can the two numbers be so different? One reason discovered is that the USA definition of the UK includes the Isle of Man and the Channel Islands, and the UK definition does not. So there's all these sorts of things that have to be fixed. But that's just one area of stats. But it's interesting how the emphasis, how much importance is put on that compared with things to do with health, and things that are more human, the vital social statistics. I've always got that impression that they take a bit of a back seat. So it's interesting. If you look, I looked at the ONS website homepage today. I imagine other statistical offices in other countries, most of the so-called advanced countries around the world will have, it'll be much the same. They're all doing very similar things because they have to under international agreements. But if you look on the homepage today, you could see the priorities. That is what the state thinks is most important. And though ONS says it's independent, yes, okay, so it's not. It's a distinction, I think, between the government, the intellectual government, and the state. I mean, ONS is a public sector body, so it is part of the capitalist state. So if you go on the homepage, first things you see are Census 2021 data and analysis. Well, that's quite you know, some useful stuff in there, because it's about, you know, population, where people live, what sort of houses they're in, and their religion, and whether they're male, female, what age they are. Yeah, great, mostly. And then sort of the next thing you'll hit with is the whole paper is economic. So you've got employment and unemployment figures, you've got inflation, you've got gross domestic product. And then there's something about population. And then if you, the next thing I noticed was you've got a interesting statements on the that's sort of the About Us statement about ONS, which I'll quote this. They say, operating impartially and free of political control, the ONS produces the numbers that matter most on the economy and business, people, population and communities. We are mobilising the power of data to help Britain make better decisions and improve lives. So, interesting, the first thing on the sort of list there, things that matter most, the economy and business. People come next, and, you know, people, population and communities. Well, you know, they're a bit sort of further down the pecking order, the food chain. And I think this bit about helping Britain make better decisions is quite interesting as well, because that's it. Who makes the decisions in capitalism, and what effect does data have on their decisions? Many of the statistics currently published would not be of any use in socialist society, or they would at the very least need radical changes before the data are anywhere near ready for use. We have to look at how they are collected, adjusted and formatted in more detail. I'm not planning to go into a lot of detail here, but I think a lot of this is sort of self-evident, but it doesn't need an expert view to just think about, you know, a lot of the thing is fairly straightforward, self-evident. You get a lot of jargon, you get a lot of jargon in all areas of science, technology, but just trying to cut through that. Yeah, so just think about stats in capitalism for a bit more. You've got what gets published is tightly controlled in a way. And there's quite a straitjacket that you're in. some of the reasons are good about that, because that means the numbers are of good, high quality. And you can make comparisons between one country and another, which is, you know, useful. You have internationally agreed code of practice, standards, regulations. This dictates what is published. For example, national accounts. There's a United Nations system of national accounts. Basically, every country which is a member, you know, recognised by the United Nations, must produce a set of accounts. There's a sort of minimum amount they must do. It's basically the more wealthy countries which can devote more resources to it, produce more detail, but there's a sort of minimum set of accounts. So I think in the UK, there's probably something like 300 people work on national accounts. And for example, in Rwanda, where there was a talk recently, sometime last year, about you know, we're doing some work, someone from ONS, group team from ONS were going out and helping the Rwandans to do their statistics, and they basically got one man who does national accounts in Rwanda with a little bit of help from others. It gives you some idea how it works. Yeah, and then there's other things. So there's a European system of accounts, which though the UK is no longer in the EU, we'll still produce under this this standard, which is the United Nations standard plus extra, so that we can make direct comparisons with the EU. And then there's things like the balance of payments man, which is all about trade and other movements of money to and from countries and how you're supposed to measure it, which is in itself, well, let's say fascinating. Depends. A lot of stuff I'm interested in more. But there's weird things go on, mainly for tax reasons, with vast amounts of money go back and forth from UK to Luxembourg, for instance, and Ireland. Between, you know, you've got these multinational firms with various subsidiaries so that they can avoid paying tax. They can make it look like most of the profits are generated in the country. It has the best tax regime, best for a firm. There's been a lot of exposure of that lately with firms like Amazon, many others. Right, so yeah, so there's all these data sources, like from the tax people. There's all these surveys, which are mandatory and they're a burden on companies and firms, especially small ones. And there's all, you know, there's big problems often with these surveys. There's you only have a list of firms that are registered, which are supposed to be all part of some group. And a lot of these firms are just some sort of tax dots where they're a paper firm where nothing actually happens. Yeah, you know, they fill in a form and there's like no numbers on it. So that's, I think that's probably enough about the economic side. I mean, the other, but I wanted to talk about that because that's something that's going to, would have to change so much in a socialist society, in a moneyless society. We'd have to completely rework this. Vital stats, health and social statistics would stay the same. May find that response rates improve.
Richard, you seem to have moved away from your microphone again.
All right, sorry.
Lean back in, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, right. I mean, when people have more faith in how the data are used, issues of confidentiality and security, it's anonymous. I mean, people are very worried about their data in now because it's hard to live your life now without signing up to this, that, and the other. People want lots of information from you, and then it gets stolen. There are consequences of identity theft, etc. In a socialist society, be in a situation where there's far more trust, there's far more cooperation. Probably get more volunteers for medical research, for example, drug trials. Be more trust in medical staff. They're no longer working for a corporation, government.
Excuse me, is anybody else having difficulty hearing Richard?
I can't hear him, he's disappearing.
Yes, I'm having a struggle.
Yeah. Right, you're going to have to lean in. Come on, speak up.
Speak up. Thank you.
I thought I was maintaining mostly the same volume, but maybe I'm just fading away as the day wears on. Sorry about that. Right, so, yes.
Just speak louder.
I'm trying to. I can't. This is the best I can do, I think. So, yeah, I was going to say that going back to like the ONS mission statement, this business about decisions being based on data. Well, in capitalism, this doesn't happen very much. Well, only in a sort of roundabout way. It's not a scientific society. It's not. Decisions aren't made based on evidence. Governments do what is expedient, what could help them win the next election. So politicians will often cherry pick data with their eyes on the media and opinion polls. And financial and economic statistics would have to be completely redesigned so that they provided information about the well-being of society. So we'd, instead of having figures to do with billions, millions of pounds, we'd have measurement in kind, where there's quantities and volumes that give a better indication of how much production is useful. We want to look at production and consumption based on what people actually want. And you know, we now got a wonderful technology that makes it extremely easy to collect the data. The data's all there, but you know, you can collect scanner data.
You're going faint again.
Markets. All right, sorry. So you know, think about supermarkets, for instance, these days, where they've got vast amounts of data on what they're selling, what people are buying. Well, we wouldn't have any buying and selling going on, but we'd know what the demand was, the real demand for all sorts of items. And production can be tailored to that. That's just one sort of example. The other thing really in socialism is that decisions will be made at the most appropriate level based on a full amount of data. What happens in capitalism is that you have experts where their experts are ignored because their research does not show, often doesn't show politicians or companies' actions in a favourable light. And it doesn't fit into their short-term agenda. So politicians love to cherry-pick the numbers, show that they're doing a wonderful job. Countless examples of that. And it's one of those, the way the system's set up at the moment, then the chief statistician ever can complain about it. And nothing really happens. I mean, the classic case of Boris Johnson repeating this dodgy number about how much money the UK was sending to the EU, the number they had on the red bus, but it had been shown to be wrong. And he repeated this number in an article in the Daily Telegraph. He got a slagging off from the Stats Authority, but nothing ever came of it. But that's all that would stop. That would be finished when we don't have politicians, basically. We're working with one another. And when we do that, we will be, we'll be confident about the information we receive and trust in it more. Act on it accordingly. And that covers everything, you know, about, especially in health, the most important thing. You know, if you have data that shows that vaccine is working, certain behaviours lead to better health, then we do it. If we found out that there's pollution in the water, contaminated foods, and it's making people sick, it would be acted on quickly. Well, the problems for the environment would be sorted much faster. Right, well, I think I've done about half an hour now. I think I'll stop there and see. One more thing I was going to say. Yeah, one thing that you probably thought about is about environmental statistics. This really highlights the problem in Cashnitsa, trying to attach monetary value to, you know, fresh air, trees, landscapes, and how much better it makes people feel. I mean, it's just, there's a whole field of research which is doing to failing. It's much easier to calculate the financial cost of cleaning up pollution than sort of having the information that will stop you doing the polluting in the first place. Right, I'll stop there and look forward to any questions.
Okay, thanks, Richard.